evening, and and thank you for inviting me here. It is my pleasure and honor again to be here and to have fellowship with you, and I'm really happy. And tonight I'm going to tell three things. So I'm going to tell first of all my testimony, how I became Christian. And secondly, I'm going to tell about the work we did in Nepal. You know, about recently there was an earthquake in Nepal and many people lost their lives, and we went there to do relief work. I'm going to tell some of that, and then I'm going to tell some of my vision I have when I go back to Nepal to be a minister. I am at the Free Church College, Edinburgh Theological Seminary now. I'm doing a master degree there, and I'm hoping to finish in November and returning back in Nepal in February, God willing. So I'm going to tell first my testimony, and I'm not going to tell because I've got limited time. I'm not going to tell all. If you want to read my full story, you can log on to Desiring God. It was on Desiring God last year, and if you type my name, you will see the full of my testimony. So my name is Suraj Kasula, and I am from Nepal, and I was raised in the Orthodox Hindu family. And at the age of 16, 17, I fell in with bad company, and we formed a gang, and I was the leader of the gang, and we often had a knife war, we often had gang fight, and we used to collect protection money. So protection money is if someone wants to start a new shop or new business in our area, they have to give money, and no one dared to comply. Everyone would comply with us. No one dared to call the police, or everyone they were afraid of us, and we were always be armed, and we had a knife and rod. You know, whenever a fight would break out, you know, we'd go and fight. You know, sometimes we will beat them up, sometimes we will be beaten up, you know. So it was I would like to say myself a pure evil. I was alcoholic, I was I used to do drugs, and so we did many evil works, and I'm going to just say two of them. And I remember once we have a conductor in the bus, you know, you don't have ticket system like here. A conductor would come and collect money when you go to bus. So I was in the bus, and a conductor was a new person who didn't know about my life, life in the gang. So he asked money, and then I gave some money to him, but he was not satisfied. He was asking more, and I was so angry, and I remember I beat him up, I smashed him up, and then I remember all his, you know, blood was over my shirt, and then I just left him, and no one dared to intervene in the fight because everybody knew that I was a bad guy and they didn't want to mess with me. So, and also I remember we were collecting protection money, and one guy did not like it, and he tried to mess with up, and I chased him, and then he went to the bus. I ran and got into the bus, and I made the bus stop. And the driver was scared, and I went inside and then pulled him out and smashed him. You know, so I was pure evil. I did many and that kinds of things. You know, these are just two examples. And I was disgraced to my society. I was disgraced to my family, and I was disgraced to my gods. So, you know, and in Hinduism there are 330 million God. You won't believe that, you know. And my mind is occupied by Hindu theology. That means in Hinduism there is no notion of forgiveness. If someone according to the Bible, you know, let's say if someone strikes you in one cheek, you know, not give another, but kill him, you know, that kinds of is taught by Hindu gods. Even Hindu gods would come down and, you know, kill many people. That's the theology. So my mind was occupied by that, and because of that, you know, I I didn't forgive people, even when you are when someone would be walking, when if he you know just watches me, you know, then I would just smash and beat him up, you know. I was like that, you know. And I remember one day, you know, someone secretly called the police, and I didn't know they were police, and they turned up in a civil dress, and it was actually, you know, and we used to hide our weapons, you know, our arsenal in the shop, and the shopkeeper would give us drugs, you know. So one day I was there, and then we would hide all our weapons, you know, there. He would hide under his bed, and then his wife did not know that. And then his wife saw that weapons, and then she immediately called the police, and I was there to take some drugs, you know. And then the police arrested me and then taken me to jail. And I remember in Nepal, you know, you won't have human rights like here for criminals. They can kill you, you know. I remember once I was taken inside, I was played football by the police, you know. Everyone was beating me up, you know, and I was horribly tortured in the custody. And my family, they were not happy, and my society, they were happy, you know, because I was ruining their children's life, making them to come to our gang. So our people were very happy that I was arrested by the police, and they wanted me to die. They would pray to their gods that I may be killed in a gang war. So I was taken to jail, and my parents, they had to pay lots of money to, you know, to set me free. And eventually, you know, I stayed for 1 month in a custody. Otherwise, I would have gone to the jail. But my parents, they had to pay money in Nepal. You know, if you pay money, you'll have your freedom, you know, from the jail. You know, a kind of corrupt country, you know, country. And when I came out, you know, I remember my heart was absolutely filled with revenge, you know, because I remember those faces who tortured me brutally, and I was determined that when I go out from the jail, I would kill those faces, you know, who tortured me, those policemen, you know. So I was looking for a great opportunity to take my revenge, to avenge my blood, you know. And because they were beating me, I was bleeding, you know, and so I was thinking that I will kill them when I go out. So I came out, and I was looking for a opportunity. And in Nepal, there is like every year there in the festival, there will be riot, you know, would break out between police and the civil, like once happened in London. So that was my great chance, and I knew those policemen would turn up. So I was there, and I remember I was charging with stone, you know. I was breaking people's roof and then hitting with that, you know, to the police. And I remember they were bleeding, and they were hit by my charge, you know, with the rock, with the stone, with the bricks. And I remember many were bleeding, and they somehow managed to entrap me. And I remember there were 50 policemen who came from four directions, and I got entrapped. And, you know, those policemen were bleeding, and they knew it was I who did that. So they, you know, I became the object of their fury, you know. They nearly killed me on that night, you know. It was 2 in the morning, whole night I was, you know, doing that thing. And then they, you know, punched me, they kicked me, you know, 50 policemen, you know. I collapsed, I was bleeding from everywhere, you know. And I remember some nice policemen had to prevent them. You had to prevent them, saying, "Don't do it, he's going to die," you know. So some nice policemen had to do that. And then, and you know, I was again taken to hospital, and then again I was imprisoned for many days. And again, my parents, you know, they were so unhappy, you know. As I said, I was disgraced to my family, society, and my gods, you know. Because I was disgraced to everybody, I also thought about killing myself, committing suicide, you know. But I didn't do. By the grace of God, I come to know now, you know. And I came out from the second time from the prison, and I went to school, and I had given up school, but I again restarted in school. I was also a horrible student. I used to mess up with even teachers, you know. And I remember that there is one of my friend, you know, who is from my village, and then he dared to share gospel with me. And he said that he knew my background, so he said that, don't worry, whatever you are, if you believe in Jesus, your sins will be forgiven. And I was so angry, you know, with him. I tried to provoke him so that I would smash him. But he was a very nice person. And then, you know, one of the things that Christian Hindu people get angry of Christianity in Nepal is cow, you know. Hindu people worship cow as the higher deity, as the goddess Lakshmi, you know, according to them. So, and they believe Westerners, American, British, European people eat cow. So they think all the Westerners are Christian, and they say Christian are cow eaters. So they get angry, and I had that mentality. I thought, you are our God eater, goddess eater. So I was so angry with him, you know, when he evangelized, you know. But somehow that word, that sentence, you know, Jesus can forgive your sins, somewhere stuck into my heart, you know. And then he became a good friend, you know, because he was such a humble person. That really, you know, attracted me, you know, that his spirituality, but I did not show up. And then he invited me to the church in Christmas, and I went to the church because I was interested in musical instrument. I went to church, and I was not interested in God, but Jesus or Bible, but I just went to see the musical instrument, and I went, and the minister in the church, he told me more about Jesus, he gave me the Bible, he showed me Jesus' movie, and I came to know many things about Jesus, but I was determined in my heart that I would never ever become Christian. And my mother told me, you can go and be a good person, but never follow that cow eating religion. You know, that's what they call in Nepal, you know. And okay, I was determined, I want to be a good person, but I won't accept Christ, you know. I always resisted. And I remember somehow in my heart, you know, that voice, some voice, I heard a voice saying, Suraj, can I come in? And I said, no, you know, I just didn't want whatever that voice is, you know, it was rising, and then that voice was getting bigger and bigger, that I always said no. Until one night, you know, I was reading Bible, because Bible became so interesting to me as a literature, you know. I thought it was just a literature, and then I read the Bible, and then suddenly something stuck, you know, and because as I said, my heart, my mind was occupied by Hindu theology. You know, there is no notion of forgiveness. If even God came down to destroy sinners and sin, you know, there is no forgiveness. If you commit sin, you die. That's what it says, you know, in Hinduism. And I had that mentality, and I said, I was disgraced to my God. But that night, I was reading the Bible from Matthew, and I suddenly my eyes fell on the verse saying, Jesus saying, if someone gives you one cheek, give another. And I was overwhelmed by that verse. I was so surprised. I have never heard that kinds of theology or that kinds of idea before, that someone striking you and giving other cheek, you know, that's terrible. I would probably kill that person if someone strikes me, you know. And then I was intrigued, and then read more, and then I came to, you know, I saw other verse, Jesus saying, I have not come to save righteous, but sinners. And then I read more, and then suddenly, you know, all those teaching, what I have got in the church, that overwhelmed me, you know. And that night I felt something very, you know, wonderful experience, you know. I felt as if, you know, the light from heaven came and, you know, overwhelmed me, overpowered me, and covered me. And I came to realize that Jesus had died for my sins, and all the sin, you know, in my heart, that bunch of sin, that black ball of sin was rolled away, you know, and I felt really peace and joy for the first time in my life. I felt as if the peace from heaven was being poured into my heart, and my heart was completely enlightened. You know, I felt like I can't put in the words, you know, that what I felt. I felt as if I was in the presence of Almighty in heaven. I was flying in sky somewhere, and I was just in a wonderful place that I don't want to come back, you know. And God really overwhelmed me that night. And I tried to resist like before, you know. some voice was saying, "Can I come in?" And that night also I tried to resist, but I could not resist. I just burst into tears. And that's why I believe in irresistible grace. I was resisting, but God overpowered me, overwhelmed me, that I could not resist, and it was invincible. And I knelt down, and I became a Christian. And that night also I felt that Jesus was saying, "You are hated by your gods. Come, I am ready to accept you. Whatever you are, whatever sins you have committed, come, I am ready to accept you. I am ready to embrace you." And that became like, wow, you know, a person who was hated by their God, who was disgraced for Hindu gods, have been accepted by Christian God. And I was so delighted, you know, and I'm so happy, you know. And tonight, if you are not a believer, I can say, you know, I am the living example for you that Jesus is alive and he can change life, you know. Because if I haven't become a Christian, I would either be dead or be living, you know, or be sentenced for life imprisonment, you know. I won't be here. Why I'm here is what Jesus did yesterday, you know. So it's all God's work, you know, in my life. And I became completely new person that by that amazing grace God's work in my life, you know. And I was converted that night, and my gang was disbanded. And I felt after that I became active in the church, actively serving, and I started to preach, and I took baptism, and I felt a call to be a minister. And that's how I end up in Edinburgh Theological Seminary, and I'm here to proclaim God's word in my life, what he did. And this life is a gift to me because he had, you know, taken all my sin away, and he took the punishment upon the cross, the curse of the covenant, to bring the blessing of covenant. And he accepted me while I was rejected by my gods and my family and my society. And they are all happy. My society, they are happy. They saw a drastic change in my life. And there are some people who became Christians just because of my life. And my family, they are so happy, and I am so happy by this new life. And that night experience is just springing up every day, you know, and just nourishing me. When I look back, you know, I'm always encouraged to go forward, and I am hoping to be a minister in Nepal, which I will go. I will tell you shortly.
I just want to tell some children, you know, what your parents believe, the God, you know, is a true God. So in future, you might be tempted of other gods, you know, like you are being taught about Buddha and Hinduism, you know. Don't fall into that, you know, because what they believe is true God. Because I have come from Nepal, where they believe many, many gods, and I have found Jesus, and he is the true way. So don't follow into that trap, because I see many European and American coming in Nepal to seek, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism, and they become monk, and, you know. So just be aware of that. So now I'm going to tell about the work we did in Nepal. And I was there for 3 weeks with my wife. And then we didn't plan to go there because of this earthquake. But we had already booked the ticket before the earthquake hit Nepal. But by the gracious providence of God, it was God's plan that, you know, that we were sent there to do relief work. And I was able to raise many helping hands, you know, were given to us by the churches who supported us. As you know, that 7.9 Richter scale shook Nepal to a score that killed over 8,000 people. And as I said in the morning, the death toll is still rising and expected to rise up to 10,000, because there are many dead bodies under the rubble. And the shaking was, you know, it lasted for over a minute, and many landmark heritage buildings and temples and villages had turned into dust in a second, and many lives have been severely affected. Many children have become orphans and widows. And there was another big aftershock, you know, 7.4 Richter scale, and the villages which survived by the first earthquake, you know, that was turned into dust after 7.4 Richter scale aftershock hit.
and it also trigger landslide, avalanche, and flood that swept away many villages. And you might heard that it was the best season to climb Everest, and there were many people, climbers were flocking there, and there were many British people. And when the earthquake hit, that avalanche was triggered, and I think 5 British people lost their lives, and at least 17 people were killed. So in the midst of this, you know, we landed in Nepal, and you know, the first thing our parents and our villagers said was, "Why have you come to die in with us in Nepal?" You know, and they said, "Get back to UK soon." So they were still living under the shadow of death, because the tremor is continually felt in Nepal. Their psychology has been traumatized, you know. And in the midst of that, we landed in Nepal, and we were able to do 3 relief work. So the first relief work where we did was this place called Jaljale. It's in Sindhupalchok district. We have 75 district, and this is the most affected district in Nepal. And you can see the whole villages has turned, you know, all villages has been destroyed. Those houses were destroyed, and those all standing houses, those are, you know, unusable. They had to be pulled down, all of them. And it was the remote area and geographically difficult, so the government could not reach there in time. And many villagers were, many people were dying because of hunger, you know. And we thought we would do the relief work there. So, and another interesting, sad, unfortunate thing was in that village, there is a local church. This is also another house destroyed. This is a local church, and this was built 2 months prior to the earthquake hit the country, and 2 days it was dedicated 2 days before the earthquake shook the country. And what happened was, once the earthquake hit, and then many, all, you know, village, the whole village had been destroyed, some Hindu extremists, they came and they gathered, and they came there to destroy the church and the Christians. The reason behind that is they accuse Christianity for this disaster. And they believe the presence of the church and the Christian in their village was a bad omen that provoked their deity, and the deity sent the plague, which is the earthquake. So when we heard this ridiculous, you know, accusation against Christian, we loaded 2 trucks of relief and then went there to do the relief work. And our goal was to bring positive impact, you know, upon people towards Christianity, you know. And they have seen with their own eyes that we have brought relief. Christian from far have come to share their grief and sorrow. And we really hope, and we really you know, interviewed some people, and their view had been changed, and you know, and we believe that in future Buddhist, Christian, you know, all will live in peace and harmony there, because those who were angry people who came to destroy the church, you know, they have got relief. So I think they won't harm anymore there. And then God raised some good Hindu people to prevent that impending disaster, you know, that destruction. And they were there to defend the church, you know. So we were really successful. And then we believe, and then we are also going to rebuild the school that was destroyed. And we believe we have made really positive impact, and their views had been changed. And, you know, and they also, you know, believe that because of Christianity, until the Christian and the church are destroyed, their God won't be appeased, you know. So that views is like ridiculous, and many Hindu people even thought that was ridiculous. And we made them feel that was just natural phenomena, just natural disaster. So we gave relief to 300 people. And because the government could not reach there because of geographical difficulties, and we had to travel whole day, and the road were highly risky because the monsoon is at hand in Nepal, and the road are terrible, you know. and it was highly risky, but we went and then we did that work by the grace of God, and then we were successful. So this is the church which was about to be destroyed, but God prevented. And this is our youth, you know. And that at the age, that's my wife, you know, she could not come here today. And our people, you know, church youth, you know, they really helped to do this relief work, and they actively participated. So that was the first relief work we did. And the second one we did was the place called Ramechhap. And in Ramechhap, in the former district we did, there were 3,500 people were killed there. And in Ramechhap district, the second relief work where we did, it was a district where 29 people were killed. And in that village, you know, only 9 or in a particular village where we chose, you know, only 9 or 10 houses were collapsed and other were cracked. So we gave relief to those affected family. But we pleaded, we asked them, you know, we offer relief to them, but they said that they would like us to, you know, contribute towards their local hydropower station, because the earthquake hit this power station. That's a power station, you know, hydropower they have set up locally. The government, you know, electricity cannot reach into that village. So they have set up their own hydropower house by the local fund. And that earthquake also hit that and damaged the powerhouse. So they said, please contribute towards that to repair, to bring again into use, because that had supplied electricity for 3 villages. And because there was no electricity, they were living in darkness. So we were so happy to do that, and we met all the maintenance costs, and they have now a light in that village. And we also provided relief to those who have lost their houses and who have no food to eat, and we gave relief. So this is the second relief work we did, and this is the powerhouse station inside. And this is the third relief work we did, you know, in Sindhupalchok again, because Sindhupalchok was most affected district. So there were many and relief were mostly needed there. And you see, that is before and after. You can see the village, whole village had been turned into dust, you know, no house was standing, you know, because there were like bunch of houses, more than 30 or 40 houses. This is only one village. In surrounding village, all houses were destroyed, you know. And then, you know, we went there again. It was highly risky road, but we made it, you know. And we again, you know, distributed to 300 families. And you know, in that village, Christianity is growing. And, you know, it was a big impact to them, you know. We thought we would evangelize there, you know, but, you know, it was not good situation to evangelize. But, you know, as you know, evangelism can done by good works also, not only by talking, you know. So, and we took the banner, and they knew it was from the church, and the local church is working very hard, and Christianity is rapidly growing. And so we believe that our relief would make positive impact on Christians, because most of the people are just negative, and even making positive impact would be great, you know. So it was wonderful, you know, that we could feed people who were, you know, dying because of hunger. And because the government health could not reach there, people were eating dead animals, you know, because they had no food. Their grains were destroyed, you know, and they had no food at that, in that critical time, you know. We reached, and when we were there, when we took a relief in a truck, you know, people just ran, you know, and they tried to grab as much as they can, you know. But we made them to be patient, and we distributed a packet of rice to every family. You know, it was so sad. It was deeply, you know, moving, you know. Just people were just, they didn't have anything to eat, you know. And our relief work had, you know, fed over 1,000 families, and they would have food to eat for 20 days. And now after 20 days, it's already 20 days, now government is reaching there. So if we hadn't done that, probably there would be many people who had died, and probably the epidemics would have broken there, you know, break out, and people might have been killed by epidemics, you know. So we were so glad that by the providence of God that, you know, we could do this work, you know. And so this is the same village. This is called Shaole. You know, those standing houses, most of the old houses are gone. Those standing houses, you know, they are not usable. They are either slanted, you know, they have to be pulled down as well. And beside that, we know we also we had money left, you know, because we could not do another relief work because we had not enough money. But whatever money we had left, you know, we contributed towards the rebuilding of the church. This is the local church. This is not our church. Our church is slightly cracked because it's new and it's one-storied. And this church, which is nearby our village, in our church, you know, had been collapsed and is not usable. So we contributed towards the rebuilding of this church. And now, you know, the big problem in Nepal is, you know, most of the churches, they don't have buildings. Like, you don't have a building. And we rent in a Hindu people's house because the majority of people in Nepal are Hindus. So what happened is, you know, we don't practice lease agreement, you know, like for 20 years, 10 years, we don't practice that. So what happened is when the earthquake hit, you know, most of the rich people, they have two houses. So one house was probably destroyed, and because they don't have house, they would come to their house where churches were renting, you know. So they would come and say, you can leave now because, you know, we have to leave here. So most of the churches have come under the open air. So they are thinking to build this temporary, you know, and they have taken the land in a lease, you know. So and they have built that, and then, you know, so we have contributed towards the building of these kinds of many buildings. And the money you have collected today is going to build another, you know, these kinds of, because there are many churches which have no room, you know, because they can't go and ask for a rent because there is no house, no sufficient house for people. So no one would give, and they have to make, you know, don't know how long it lasts. So we are contributing towards these kinds of building, you know. And this is the one example that we have helped to build this building. And this is a completed one. And it is very cheap, you know, because this is all that that kinds of, what do you call that, tin, you know. It's very cheap to build that, you know. So they have built this, and then they can now do their own fellowship on the Lord's Day. So we are so happy. And yeah, and now I'm going to tell something about my vision shortly. And so, as I have told you, this is our church. I'm going to tell something about that shortly. So I'm going to be a minister. That's what I'm called for. And I'm finishing in November, and I'm hoping to go back in February, and I'm hoping to get ordained from the Free Church, because I love Free Church and I want to be the part of Free Church in Nepal. And International Mission Board had, you know, interviewed me twice, and it's being processed that I might get ordained from the Free Church. If not, even I will be working in the Free Church in association with the Free Church, and they are happy to do that. And this is our church, and we didn't have buildings, so we had three time shifting from one to another. As I said, we don't have release lease agreement, so we were renting in Hindu people's house, and they would come, and sometimes, you know, even a person is nice, and, you know, their relatives, their family would say, if you keep this church, then your God will punish you. So that kinds of dodgy thing, and then we face that kinds of things three times, and eventually, you know, God provisioned this church. And St. Columba, Senses in Edinburgh, I'm a member of Senses, and I pleaded them, and they raised £6,000 to build our church. And £6,000 become lots of money in Nepal, and we were able to build this church. And so that is the church, and that's the paddy field. So it's a beautiful church, and we have 30 members when we planted this church, and we have now over 50 people. And when I was back in Nepal, I saw many new faces. And you might know that Christianity is second largest Christian growing country in the world. You know, People don't say that because there is no scholar in Nepal to write, but I heard from American missionaries, British missionaries, that they write, you know, the rapid growth of Christianity. We have 30 million people and 3.5% is growing in Nepal. So 3.5% in over 30 million population, and that's big. And, you know, Christianity is even those remote village, you know, I remember one guy pointed saying this village, he said these all are Christian, they are all Christian, that village, you know. And I was so surprised to see that in remote village, you know, God is working, and there are massive growth of Christianity in Nepal, you know. And another thing is, I am heavily influenced by Reformed theology, and I am really, Donald MacLeod is my professor, and I am really admire of him, and he had a big influence on me. And my greatest church father, Scottish church father, is Samuel Rutherford, and he is another great admirer of mine. So because I am heavily influenced by Reformed theology, I think, you know, this is the time to teach Reformed theology in Nepal. And to do this, I'm hoping to start Reformed library in Nepal. I have got 800 theological books to be taken back. I have taken 400 already, and 400 already to be taken are to be taken back. And I'm still buying some books, you know. And Southern Mission Group support group, they had raised over £2,000 to take my book. And Banner of Truth Trust, they are going to help lots of books, you know, so that I can establish a Christian Reformed library. And I believe this library will be a channel to spread Reformed theology in Nepal, you know, because I believe Reformed theology is a true theology, it's a Christian biblical theology, biblical Christianity, you know, because I didn't know about that until I came to Scotland, and I came to know, you know, that I knew that, you know, it's irresistible grace. But when I came to, you know, Scotland and learned, and I came to know that what exactly is like, you know, and I believe that assurance of salvation cannot be given by Arminian theology. It only can be given by Reformed theology, you know. So I believe, you know, I am assured of my salvation because I am Reformed, you know. So these kinds of thing which is to be taught in Nepal, there is no Reformed church, and I'm hoping to start Reformed church in Nepal. And I'm hoping to mobilize our church youth. We have many, God has given many new Christian youth in our church. We have more than 20 youth, and they are actively working in the church. And I hope to mobilize them because they are ready to go and they are ready to serve God. And those villages, you know, that's their, some of our youth in the church, that's their villages. They reported about those, you know, accusation to Christian, and the another village where we helped to rebuild the powerhouse, you know, those villages are theirs, and they told us that let's do the work there, relief work there, so that in future when we go and evangelize, that would be great, you know, that they are hoping to do church plant there in future. So because of that village, we did relief work, and I hope they would go in future, and we can mobilize them. And they are really jealous for evangelism. And those who will be called by God to be a minister will send them to Bible colleges. So I have a big vision, and, you know, to also to plant churches in Nepal, Reformed churches. And I'm hoping to, when I go back, I'm hoping to plant a Reformed church in the heart of the capital city and make that church as a mother church, and, you know, plant other church which will come under her, you know, like I'm really going like a Presbyterian church government system, and really going systematic way, you know, because when I go back, I can easily travel, you know, I can oversee two churches, you know. So it's very big plan, you know, but in Nepal, unfortunately, you know, ministers are not paid in Nepal because churches are run by, you know, Western support, you know. So it's very hard. That's why I pleaded with the free church to give, to support me. And I am doing MTS master degree so that if I don't get anything, you know, in Nepal, if I don't get support, I will be able to teach in the Bible college and I can survive, you know. So that's why I studied master. Otherwise, I was thinking of going as soon as I had finished my bachelor degree. So it's a big challenge in Nepal, and a sacrifice, you know. Have to live sacrificial life. Ministers are not paid, you know. And I am hoping to, because our church is growing rapidly, and, you know, we sit on the floor, and this church is packed now. You know, when I was there, I see that it was packed. I was preaching 3 weeks, and we knew that God would give us growth. That's what we bought that land. You see there where there is no paddy. That's all our land we had bought, so that in future we can extend the building and we can build a big building, so that we, when you know our church will increase, we will have a big building to worship, you know. So these are all my visions, and you know, as to speak and to say, to explain is very easy, but when you put into action, you know, action is very hard, you know. So just please pray for me. It's not easy work, you know. It's a battle, it's a challenge, you know, but God is with me, and I believe, you know, that God will help me to shed light in the gospel, light of the gospel in Nepal, and those who were like gangster like me, who are in the darkness, who are dying in their sins, you know, that I may be able to witness Christ, and God might, you know, turn their hearts and might convert them. You know, it's all God's work, you know, and I am just an instrument and like to be a channel for the blessing of the blessing. So please pray for me. And as I said, you know, all the raised money will be used to rebuild schools and the churches which are being built in Nepal. So I think that's all I have to say. And if you have some question, then I'm happy to take. Or is that what we are going to do?
You can ask questions, yeah.
And after that, let me first show you this video, and this explain all the present situation of Christianity in Nepal, you know, from the beginning, you know, to the end. This is short video, and that will explain itself, you know. That's typical Nepali music. Just want to add that, you know, the gospel where, you know, was brought by Scottish missionaries in Nepal. I have written an article on the monthly record, you know, you might or might not have seen, you know, that Scottish missionaries were the one who brought gospel into Nepal. So that makes, you know, to pray more, you know, because it was your ancestor, your forefathers who brought Christianity in Nepal, and the fruit, you know, that the seed they had sown, you know, is being cultivated in Nepal, and we are really thankful for that. Okay, if you have any question, then I'm happy to take it. Okay. Any questions? Whatever about my life or about the work I'm going to do or about the work we did in Nepal. If you have any questions.
What was it that brought you to Edinburgh? How did you hear about it?
Sorry?
How did you hear about the Edinburgh
plan? Oh, yeah. So I didn't know about Scotland. I didn't know Scotland was a separate country, you know, a separate state, you know. I knew London and England and United Kingdom, you know. And once I got converted and I felt called to be a minister, I wanted to study abroad theology, and I applied in America, but I didn't get visa. So it was easy to come to UK then, you know. So I applied in UK and I landed in Ayrshire, you know. And then it was so glad that because I knew Robert Burns, and I had just done My Love is Like a Rated Road. I did exam, and I landed in Ayrshire where Robert Burns was, you know. And it was just wonderful, you know. A study of, you know, literature, you know, who had just finished that exam, you know. And I was so glad, you know, to see Burns Cottage and everything, you know. And then I was there, and I was looking for the Bible college, and then professor. I went to hear free church, and the professor student would come and preach there. And I came to know about this free church college, and I applied, and I got visa. My application was successful, and I went there, and I have spent 5 years there. Probably I'm the student who spent longest time in the college, you know, because I did 4 years bachelor. Normally you do three. Because I'm an international student, I did 4, and I'm doing master's, so 5 years, and probably the first Nepali person, you know. So it's all God's providence, you know, because if I had got visa in America, I would not be able to take my wife there, because there is no dependent visa. So it's all God's plan that I came here, and my wife is working in the hotel, and who is supporting me financially, because I'm not a free church student, I don't get any money from free church. So she is the one who is working and, you know, helping me. So it's all God's plan. If I had gone in America, I would have followed the American dreams of really living in America. I would not like to go back to Nepal, you know, it's, life is hard, you know. So, and I was so angry by then, you know, like, oh God, I wanted to do something for you, but you didn't give me visa. When I came here, I came to know God was right, I was wrong, you know. So that might be a good example for you, because we sometimes think we are, you know, we know better than God, you know, because God knows future from the beginning, you know, but we don't know future and we complain, you know, but God knows. And then today I am seeing, you know, I was really wrong, you know. Yeah, any more questions, please?
You have any contact with the guys that you were growing up with?
In the gang?
Yeah, in the gang. And if you do, mm-hmm. do you know what direction you're...
Oh, yeah. All the gangs, we are local gangs, you know, because... I was the leader of the gang, you know, they were not very interested, you know, I made them to come, you know, force them, you know, that's why the villagers, their parents would hate me, you know, and they wanted me to be killed, you know, because if I was not running that gang, no one would be interested. So they came, you know, and then they are, once I became Christian, they got disbanded, you know, and they are not Christian. Most of them are not Christian. So I am really, I have a heart to evangelize them, you know. That's why I'm hoping to go back, you know. I know I was tempted by British life, you know. At one point, I thought, let's get settled here. I can apply to free church. I can be a free church minister and I'll get mans and cars and, you know. Everything, you know, it's like so tempting because, you know, compared to Nepal, UK is a paradise, honestly, you know, if you have compared, you know, because you don't have earthquake, you don't have tsunami, you don't have wild animals, you know. In Nepal, people are, you know, eaten by tigers every year. Recently, there was a leopard turn up in the village and kill a woman and her injured many people, you know. So there's many fear, many atrocities happen in Nepal, you know. And British life is just, I mean, you don't have to pay for health insurance like that, you know. It's just, honestly, it's just wonderful life, you know. But I am going back, you know, and I am really, I feel really called to go to Nepal despite this hardship, you know. And I'm going and I feel burdened to take evangelism, to evangelize to those who are dying in their sins, who are really living life, you know, of hell and, you know, like, who are being used by the devil, you know, they can't be changed until the gospel intervene in their life. So I'm really desperately, I'm really going back. Yeah. Any more questions, or we can? Yeah, we are in the capital city, so it's fine, but you have to pay a lot, you know. Yeah, so. One of the thing why people they save money in Nepal is for this, you know. I know you also save, but most of the people what I have seen here in UK, they don't save, you know, because they don't care. Because if they get injured or hurt, everything free. They don't have to care about their children because education is free. But in Nepal, you know, you have to save money, you know, for education. If accident happens, then you have to pay lots of money, you know. And people really, really, they save money, you know. So it's very hard, you know. Education is very expensive in Nepal. If you send your children to government school, which is not very good, and if you send them to boarding school, to English school, you know, oh, you have to pay lots of money, you know. So you are really fortunate in that sense, you know. Yeah.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Thank you, Suraj. It's good to... I never met anyone before that knew Robert Burns. Or who Samuel Rutherford admired. They got that wrong. Yeah. But it's very good. And I think, first of all, the program will just pray with Suraj. Yeah. Just like.